Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Thank you very much, John, and good morning, everybody. One of the great things, I think, about working apprenticeships, which I find, and I guess many people in this room find, is that it's about making a real difference to young people's lives, to people's lives in general, and to businesses. And that's great, and I think we can be very pleased and proud with the progress that's been made over the recent years on that as a sector and as a group of employers. One thing we're not short of is challenges, and so I feel as though today, being asked to talk just about challenges, I feel I'm doing the second half of my normal presentation, and Gil has covered some of the first half, so I'm starting halfway through, so that should be an interesting challenge. So we're not short of challenges, but just a few words of context. I think we should be pleased with where we are, but by no means complacent. I know that when we meet with the minister is always very energised and broadly very pleased with the growth of apprenticeships and the quality of apprenticeships, but he makes very clear to me, and makes very clear to us on every occasion, that this isn't the final point. You know, there's still an awful lot more to do. It is the centrepiece of government skills strategy, but it is an incredibly active policy agenda. It's sort of not an area where you think you've cracked it. It's definitely lots of things to look at, to explore, to scrutinise. And we use every bit of information, including, importantly, the surveys that Gila has referred to about learners and employers, to constantly increase our knowledge of what's happening with apprenticeships, to forensically look at them and say, OK, it's generally very good, but could do better, certain sectors where we need to work harder, certain aspects of it. So we're constantly trying to reach, I guess, a place where every apprentice who invests their time and effort into an apprenticeship gets the quality of experience that they're looking for and they want to invest their time in. Well, apprenticeships, we know, relate to a whole series of agendas. Economic growth, probably the most important, but of course, raising participation age and to problems of tackling youth unemployment, very, very important at this moment. And I think one of the things that I'm now much more conscious of than perhaps a couple of years ago is we now have a whole series of celebration events, and there's much to celebrate. And I think, again, many people in this room asked about the highlights of their year working on apprenticeships, or when individuals succeed, often for the very first time, often adults succeed for the very first time, as well as young people, that feeling of pleasure, elation that they get, and the reflected glory and feelings of pleasure that you get as somebody who has a small part to play in changing their lives and delivering apprenticeships. So a bit of context before we talk about the challenges. The first challenge that I identified is really one of the reasons why, perhaps the main reason why the National Apprenticeship Service was set up in the first place, was about increasing the number of employers who offered apprenticeships. I know, John, you used the term, you used the figure 5% of all employers offering apprenticeships. I mean, the figures tends to vary, but it's still always very low. It tends to be in that 5 to 10%. I still find it frustrating that despite all the work that's being done, I know last year there were about 7,000 new workplaces a week coming into apprenticeships, and you know, I meet so many employers, and well, the providers are working so hard to deliver new employers. We just don't seem to be able to shift that figure up significantly. When you're out on the ground, it feels more than that, but so when you quote the 5% figure, it just feels a mixture of frustration, but also a recognition there is so much more that we need to do to bring more employers into the apprenticeships and to share the experiences, the very positive experiences that Gila has referred to already about what an apprenticeship brings. And I see that in my own organisation. In a like vein, the new sectors. There are very few sectors, I think, these days where you cannot find apprentices. I guess there will be some subsectors. But if I look at sectors like creative and cultural sector, a very active sector, but I look at the number of apprenticeships a few years ago, pretty well zero. You know, look at it a year or two ago, you know, maybe 100 or two, now a few hundred. You know, it just doesn't. It's not easy to pull a switch and turn on apprenticeships in all sectors, though is that I think that some of the developments in the sector, if you take creative and cultural as an example, have been very positive. So you can now go into there and see apprenticeships clearly related to jobs in the sector. So rather than generic apprenticeships that we once had, you know, you can now go in and look at set design or lighting. You can see a much closer connectivity between apprenticeships and the jobs. So I think that's very encouraging. But it makes the point that while some sectors do take longer to bring it into apprenticeships. So over the last few years, we've seen a lot of growth in areas such as in schools, in local authorities, obviously in retail. Seeing much faster growth now in financial services. And these things do tend to come a bit in waves. Accountancy, I know the accountancy, a few people here at the AET today, and I think that's important. You see big growth there. Because you see employers in the sector getting apprenticeships, applying apprenticeships, seeing the benefit of apprenticeships, and business competitors looking at them and saying, yes, I can see there's something in that for us. So I think growth in sectors will come in waves, and we need to keep working at it. Another reason why a National Apprenticeship Service was set up in the first place was to make it easier for employers to find an apprenticeship, to find their way through to an apprenticeship. Our small business team does that. We try basically to answer their fundamental questions, give them advice about what's available and connect them to local training providers and colleges as quickly as they can so that they can develop a long-term relationship on the ground using the power of the National Apprenticeship Service, but also the power of the sector as a whole. And later this year, we'll be introducing our online employer tool, which will make it a lot easier for employers to find their way through. And the key, I think, will be to ensure that they've got a system which enables them to interrogate to an extent all the providers that are available, the services that are out there, so they can work their way through a series of relatively small number of clicks through to people that they can trust, they know, and develop a relationship with. And I think that's great. In many countries, they use incentives, and we, as you know, Gila has just mentioned, we've got an incentive for 16 to 24-year-old new employers taking on apprentices of £1,500. It is, of course, quite common in countries across Europe to flex incentives, particularly for young people in relation to supply and demand. If there are lots of opportunities for apprentices, then the incentives may go up and vice versa. So when you need to get more people, depending on working on the employer side, you can flex the amount of money they get. So, as I say, if we need more opportunities, you can pay more incentives. We'll see how the apprenticeship grant goes at the moment. It's too early to give an assessment of that, but I think that's going to be important. One of the other areas in which we try to attract more employers is to be flexible in provision, and many people in the room will be familiar with GTAs and ATAs. It might be very different services that are provided to employers, but equally important. Gil has mentioned the recognition process for ATAs. After this meeting, I'm meeting with GTA England to talk about their report following the commission of GTAs. So, again, we're trying to invest in GTAs and ATAs to encourage people to take up those models, because they offer something to the apprentice market and to employers that otherwise wouldn't be there and is very, very important. I was interested again, John, in what you said about the geographical spread of apprenticeships. One of the things that I feel I should say is that the fastest growth in the country is in London. That's very pleasing to see because, as you said, there have been parts of the country which have historically had strong traditions of apprenticeships, and those have tended to be in industrial areas and in the northern areas. But it's delighted to see London catching up so quickly, and working with the mayor in London very closely, who's really driving this agenda, as are other local authority leaders in places like Greater Manchester. I do think that one of the challenges is to get everybody in those urban localities working together in partnership, aligning our funding, working together, aligning our resourcing, planning together to really make a huge difference. And I'm seeing that, increasingly. I'm looking at the Greater Manchester plan only the other day, and that's looking, again, very, very promising. And, of course, we've got the Jason Holt review of SMEs and the employer ownership pilots, both of which I'm sure we'll learn a great deal about. So the first challenge, I think, remains one of ensuring that we increase the number of new employers who are able to offer high-quality apprenticeships. Sorry, I'm going to trouble you. I wonder if somebody could pass me a glass of water, which would be... thank you, John. I'll carry on for now. every apprenticeship, of course, actually requires somebody in it. It's not just about... Thank you, John. It's not just about people, it's not just about employers, important though that is. We do need people to come along and take up that apprenticeship. Now, we know that particularly 16 to 24, you know, 16 to 18, is a very difficult labour market. We've got special policies to try to cope with that. But you know, both speakers so far have made the point that this is about employment. It's not a training course. And therefore, we do have to recognise that growing apprenticeships, say in 16 to 18, albeit slower than 19 to 24, is quite an achievement at the moment. And you look at sectors such as construction and house building, having a very difficult time in terms of employment at the moment. You know, the rest of the economy is more than compensating for that. But it does, if you see double-digit reduction in apprenticeships in construction, you realise that what impact the employment market will have on real jobs and real apprenticeships. I think one of the big challenges as well for us, and again, if we look at European models for this, are getting more young people to see the apprenticeship as what they want to do when they reach 16. I mean, at the moment, we know, and I don't like to caricature things in this way, but we know that a lot of people get to 16 and make their choices, and some of them realise that they're not going to go on to university, and they decide they're going to take an apprenticeship. I say I don't like to caricature because I meet a lot of very, very capable apprentices who could go to university and choosing to apprenticeship. But nevertheless, let's stick with that. But if you look into Europe, you look at 13- and 14-year-olds, they already know when they get 16 they're going to want an apprenticeship. They're starting to fill in their CVs. They're doing volunteering, they're doing work experience, they're doing all sorts of things at that stage to prepare their applications for a high-quality apprenticeship. And I think it's interesting, again, as an aside, if you go to Austria, you get an apprenticeship in Austria, you can apply to any university of your choice when you finish your apprenticeship. So, yeah, there are some interesting comparisons here, but I'm absolutely clear that having more people who prepare themselves earlier for apprenticeships is really important if we can get more young people coming through. And we need to get across to young people and their parents not just the range of apprenticeships available, the occupational range, but the fact that they can go on to higher levels of skills and with some great companies. And I'll come back to that in a moment. Looking particularly at attracting young people, I do think we've learned a lot from the competitions and from World Skills about how exciting apprenticeships can be. World Skills London, we had coach loads of young people coming in from local schools to see the fantastic skills that were on display from people in this country who are ex-apprentices and across the world. That would have had such an uplifting effect on them and opened their eyes about apprenticeships. And I find that wherever I go, when I go into schools with employers, it's the ex-apprentices who go in and talk to them about their experiences that really change their attitudes. They ask them what cars they drive, they ask them what they learn, how much they earn, they ask them the sort of questions you or I would never dare ask. But my goodness me, don't they take notice of these people who are very, very impressive role models. So we've got to get more information, we've got to get more excitement into schools about the availability, and in many countries across the world, of course, they target parents in particular, and we mustn't forget the impact that parents have on their children's career choices or their learning choices. Apprenticeship Vacancies is the National Apprenticeship Service's online recruitment tool. We do need to make it incredibly easy for people to apply for an apprenticeship. If I think back to when I was 16, most apprenticeships are offered by training providers. When I was 16, I didn't know what a training provider was. I knew what the college was, but I didn't know what a training provider was. I don't know how I would have found out about an apprenticeship. Knowing that I can go online and see more than 10,000 apprenticeship opportunities and search by location today is fantastic. And I would encourage, and I keep encouraging Graham and his members to try and ensure that all apprenticeships that are being recruited to or are on apprenticeship vacancies, because we've got to create this one place to go where people can get all the information they need and not fragment that. I think it's really, really important that we do that. And we need to make more use, even more use than we do, of the young advocates, the ambassadors, the alumni, the people who've completed competitions, the role models for the future. It's those are the people who will really impress the apprentices of the future. The conference theme is principally about quality, and high-quality apprenticeships is the third of the four challenges that I've highlighted in this particular speech. I think we need to ensure that the apprenticeship and high quality are closely associated with all sectors. To me, that starts with setting the standards at the beginning. It starts with set skills councils that we need to really benchmark what is not only what's the standard in this country, but what's the international standard. I've been meeting a lot of employers on the back of the introduction of the 12-month minimum duration. And the discussion that I've been having with them quickly goes to, well, what more could you do? You know, if some of these apprenticeships are taking less time and we're going to make sure that they're going to take a minimum of 12 months, then that's not just a case of, well, do training in 6 months and then, you know, drift the rest of the 6 months. It's an opportunity to really look at what training is taking place. And employers, I find, are very responsive to that. And, you know, put in the notion of, you know, aren't you trying to compete internationally, which many companies are, and you get a very excited reaction and you see the real opportunities of that. So it starts with the standards. I also found when I was analysing the issues around short-duration apprenticeships that we'd lost that connectivity between what most sector skills councils said they wanted, what the employers through sector skills councils say they want, and what was delivered at the end. So there are lessons for us from that. But of all the apprenticeship frameworks, last time before the introduction of the 12 months, only three out of over 200 said that they expected their apprenticeship to finish in less than 12 months. So we've got to get that sense of employers owning and seeing through what it is that the quality of the experience they expect people to get for their sector. And Gila has already talked about ensuring that you get people come through the system who can't just get by, but are actually really capable and competent to moving to the next level. So I think that's really, really important. We've started by, we'll be publishing shortly the apprenticeship quality statement. This was something which a number of us here were involved in the Select Committee recently, and the Select Committee, Biz Select Committee, focused, and the evidence focused quite early on what is an apprenticeship. People were asked what an apprenticeship is, and we've got sort of variations on a theme, but we thought that the best way of ensuring that we did get high-quality apprenticeships was to really put some effort into defining it. I think we've got an excellent statement. The challenge will be, though, to ensure that that's what's funded and delivered. And that's what I'm now working with the Skills Funding Agency on, to say, OK, here's the definition of apprenticeships. Worked out with the sector is absolutely what we want. Let's track through how we now ensure, from communications all the way through to contract management, through, just making sure everybody understands what's expected and what expects to be funded, what will be inspected. From my point of view, Skills Funding Agency, there you are. That's what I want you to do for the rest of the year on behalf of the National Apprenticeship Service. That's a quality of apprenticeship. That's what we want to fund. Let's make sure we do. So that's going to be a very important piece of work for the coming year. We do need to deal decisively with all threats to quality. I still get correspondence on the back of Panorama, on the back of some of the issues that have come. Not a flood of correspondence, but occasionally. And we absolutely must look into every single one of those instances and stop anything which is damaging to quality. I mean, we're determined to do that. I think the sector expects us to do that, and we absolutely will. It's a minority, but there's a minority which the majority want to see us tackle, and to tackle it pretty vigorously, fairly, but robustly too. We also, if we're going to have high-quality apprenticeships, we need to ensure big employer contribution. I'm not talking necessarily there about cash. I'm talking about employers who really own the process of the apprenticeship and put their own effort into that. It's not somebody coming in and doing an apprenticeship. It's the employer who's driving that apprenticeship activity. And I see so many great employers working at that, and you just see the pride that they get from their own apprentices that they're producing. But the final point on that slide is a workplace conducive to personal growth. A few years ago, we did a good deal of research into types of workplaces where if you were an apprentice, you'd be taken on after your apprenticeship, taken on in the sense of your own development, and you'd be given an opportunity and the space and the support to really flourish and capitalise on that training, as opposed to, oh, you've done your apprenticeship, we'll just carry on doing the job you've always done. You know, surprisingly, that doesn't work as well as the type of employer. And we've published that research, and I think it's something we regularly need to bring to people's minds. It's the sort of thing which top quality providers and top quality employers do automatically, but we must lose sight of the fact it's what the individual then does in subsequent years after their apprenticeship's been completed that's important, not what they do on the day that they take a technical certificate or whatever. The fourth of my four priorities is about more advanced and higher level apprenticeships. I think of all the things that we've done in the last year, this has been the activity which has excited and energized the sector and employers in particular. There's so many employers now who beat their way to our door because they want to have conversations with us because of the fact that we've got these higher level apprenticeship opportunities coming through. I always think it's important not to get ahead of where we are in reality. You know, let's be clear about this. These are mostly opportunities that are arising, but there are now apprentices completing apprenticeships in life sciences and a whole sort of other areas, which John Hayes, I think, will shortly be announcing the second round of the Higher Apprenticeship Fund. I think you'll find those, again, very, very exciting. But lots of real blue-chip companies are coming to us and saying this is hugely important. I also think it's very, very important for parents, too, who are advising their children on the future and the opportunities and the routes they should take, to know that this isn't a cul-de-sac, this is a route way where you can go all the way through to through to degrees and to higher level qualifications, to professional status. I think is hugely, hugely important to them. And so we are trying to dip our toes in the water a little bit, which is why last year we sponsored and put some money into the Baker Deering Trust to work with UTCs, and we want to work with DfE and other forms of education so that people can see apprenticeships as a natural route way out of some of these institutions and educationalists. We do need to keep making people aware of opportunities. One of the things, though, that I've said to the sector previously is, you know, what do we think the challenge of higher level apprenticeships and higher level standards of teaching and training mean for the workforce? You know, have we all got the capability that we need to train at that level? I think it's a challenge for the future, which is one that I'm sure we'll embrace. Another challenge is that many businesses have traditionally recruited graduates only. I find that increasingly they are saying to me that they want the cream of best routes. They want the best people who are coming out of school and the best people who are coming out of university. And that is challenging their recruitment methods. And I've yet to meet an employer who, having changed those recruitment methods, has not benefited from that. But there are some, I won't name them, who are absolutely determined that their reputation rests on only recruiting graduates. So we'll see what that does to business competitiveness over the years. My view has always been that we should encourage as many graduates as we can, and we should encourage as many apprentices as we can, and that both should be high-quality routes and people should choose what's right for them. And then the final challenge I think I've highlighted there is, of course, the successful introduction of loans. I know you're going to be talking about that later on this morning, but ensuring that those who are taking level 3 and above qualifications, 24 and above, there's a successful transition to those new arrangements is very important to us. So those are my four big challenges, but just so you're not sitting there thinking he's neglected all these other things, there are some other things I wouldn't say are keeping me awake at night, but nevertheless on my list. Gillian mentioned the fact we need to support key growth sectors. We still do need to tackle the issues of greater access to apprenticeships for those people who are not, including people on the programs at the moment in sufficient numbers. Those include people with disabilities. We do need to ensure that the National Career Service, Job Centre Plus and Apprenticeship Vacancies all link up, so we've got one single source of information and intelligence about apprenticeships. People need to be able to get the skills they need to move into apprenticeships, and we need to ensure that everybody gets the right experience and the right job training and right pay. I mentioned the surveys. The survey shows, again, sort of stubborn but small percentage of people that we're not giving the right experience, or they're not recognising the right experience. We've got to make sure that that applies to everybody. And the overall system needs to continue to be very much as flexible and responsive as the policy agenda is and all the information that comes back to us from those people who are delivering apprenticeships. And perhaps the biggest challenge in some ways for me is having grown the apprenticeships to this level, We just need to ensure that we don't slip back on the apprenticeships, that we keep this trajectory of growth so that people in this country will recognise that vocational training is serious business and a serious contribution to the future economic growth of this country. So a few challenges and quite a lot to do. I'm not sure I will sleep tonight after all that, and I've slightly worried myself with the scale of that, but pleasingly, there are lots of people across the sector who are not only trying to keep us up to the mark, but actually, more importantly, helping us with that agenda, and I'm very grateful for all of their contributions, and I'm sure there'll be a huge success over the coming years. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.